This is Digital Story Podcast number 697, July 23rd, 2019. Today's theme is Protect Yourself from Smash and Grab. I'm Derek Story. Photography gear can pack a lot of value into a compact, easy-to-carry bag. And for that reason, it's become a popular target for thieves looking to grab a big payday at your expense. Given that these ripoffs can happen in just the blink of an eye, what can you do to put the odds in your favor? I'll cover a few strategies in today's TDS Photography Podcast. So I've been thinking about this topic for a bit, but recently an event happened that really brought everything to the forefront, and I thought I would share, I'll start out by sharing a text that I received from one of our workshop members after the workshop, and then I'll talk a little bit more about the ramifications. This is from John, and I want to read you the note that I got from him a few hours after our workshop had concluded. Hey Derek, I'm going to buy that Ricoh GR3 after all, but for a really crappy reason. On my way back from Bodega Bay, I stopped in San Francisco for gas. There was a bar and grill across the way, so I parked and had dinner. In that time, someone smashed the window and reached into the SUV's trunk and grabbed two bags. Not even a bad neighborhood, judging by appearances. So, gone are my camera gear, memory cards, and laptop. So the good news is that everything was insured, scheduled personal property on my homeowner's policy, hence a new GR3. And an Olympus too, of course. Hey, I'm going to remember a good week with you and everybody and forget this ugly event at the end. So yeah, I was just shocked to see this note from John, this text message from John. And, you know, first of all, I just felt terrible. We had a terrific workshop. I mean, I want to underline terrific, capital T, terrific. The presentation had gone well. John had shared some beautiful images, as did everyone else who participated. And we really ended the three and a half day event, on a very high note. Once the event ended, on Saturday morning, everyone went about their way. We cleaned up the house there and, you know, went back to Santa Rosa. John had to catch a flight, so he was heading back to San Francisco. And along the way, this happened to him. So I wrote him back, you know, in the text, first of all, conveying how terrible I felt about it, but then talking about this topic itself. And a while later, he sent me this email. And I want to read you this email because there's some real wisdom in this note from him. So here we go. Around 20 years ago, a photographer I know was walking on the short cliffs near Otter Cliffs near Acadia National Park. It was level ground, he told me. He stepped on a rock, and because of the sand on the sole of his hiking boot, he slipped. His expensive Nikon zoom lens and body crashed on the rock, destroyed. 2 days later, he had a check from his homeowner's insurance company for the full amount. He told me, get insurance. I did. Just last year, I met a photographer who was on a workshop on the coast of Massachusetts. She and her friends went to a seafood restaurant for dinner. When they walked back to their car, they found a smashed window and probably $10,000 worth of gear gone. The parking lot attendant said he didn't see anything. Sadly, the photographer I spoke to didn't have the gear insured. That's tragic. Here's what I recommend to any of your listeners. Call the insurance agency where you bought renter's or homeowner's insurance. I'm talking about the local agent, not so much the insurance company. Call the agency and say, I have some camera gear that I want to insure. Can you give me a quote, please? They'll ask for the value of your gear, add it all up, and they'll give you a quote. In my case, I have $3,000 worth of gear, and the coverage costs me $68 a year. Now, there's a nice surprise. For some reasons, items covered on the schedule of personal property do not have a deductible. Amazing, right? That's how my friend got full replacement value for his smashed Nikon body plus lens. I know that insurance is a boring subject, yes, but let's face it, bad luck happens. And it certainly happened to John. But, you know, because of John's misfortune, I think it brought this topic to the forefront for us all to discuss this week. Now, along those lines, my experience has been very similar to what John experienced. The numbers are a little different for me, but I think proportionally, they're about the same. In my case, I'm insured with USAA here at the studio. So I could just go online to their site and, you know, they have, you know, the different types of insurance products. And one of them is a rider for expensive personal items. For my personal gear, I have $15,000 insured via this rider that we've been discussing. And I just set it up right there on the website. And what you have to do is you want to enter the specific item and then the value, specific item and the value. Now, you can save yourself some time if you have your documentation available. You can upload that with the item, such as the purchase receipt or the invoice. Probably at some point, you'll have to provide that if you have the claim. In my case anyway, USAA allows me to front load that. And I've actually chipped away at it and have most of that documentation in there. It's just something that, you know, I do every now and then, right? When I've got all the paperwork out, I'll find something and go, I'll scan that, put that in or whatever. Now, the cost for me for the $15,000 a year is $16.16 a month. And that adds up to $194 for the, you know, for all 12 months. Just like as John said in his case, there's no deductible. So $194 a year for my $15,000 worth of gear, my, you know, my personal stuff there. And I don't want to lose it. And if I do lose it, I want to be able to go out and replace it and buy some more. Now, the whole process, as I recall, when I did it, took me about 30, maybe 45 minutes because I could do it online. And I suspect that these days that most of the companies, you know, that we work with that have our homeowners insurance or our renters insurance allow us to go ahead and, you know, fill out the documentation online. Then, you know, they confirm that they received it. And unless they have any specific questions, they just go ahead and enforce the rider, usually within 24 hours. And then, of course, you know, do the billing. In my case, I just pay the $16 per month. There's no real advantage to me, you know, paying the lump sum all at once. $16 per month is not a whole lot for that peace of mind. And that's in addition to what I have here at the studio and, of course, what I have at the house as well. I like having that stuff covered. Because if something happened, like in John's case, where I lost a big chunk of it at once, going on a big trip or something like that, where I would have more stuff than usual, that could be quite expensive to replace. Now, the part that makes me still sad, all of that being said, in John's case, is that not only did he lose his gear, which he'll be able to get that replaced, but he had a bunch of images. So he lost his memory cards. He lost his laptop. He basically lost everything that he had, you know, from that trip. Didn't have automatic backup. You know, he was going to back up when he got home and he wasn't going to back up on the spot. One of the first questions I asked him is, you know, do you have iCloud? Because if you're loading in the photos, have iCloud. We had Wi-Fi up at the house. Then all those images would have been in his cloud account waiting for him when he got his new laptop or logged into a machine at home. But unfortunately, that wasn't his situation. So there's actually a couple parts to this. There's the part that backing up while you're on the road, and then there's, you know, protecting your actual gear. In some ways, losing the pictures is more traumatic because if you have your gear insured, you can get it back. So let's talk a little bit about best ways to protect your gear. Address that side of the equation right now. The number one point, as we've been talking about, is insure it. Insure it. Because despite our best precautions, bad things still happen. They happen all the time. You can insure your gear for a reasonable amount, And at the end of the day, this is your best safety net, because as much as we plan, as much as we try to protect, just like that story that he told of the photographer that just had some wet sand on the bottom of his boot and stepped on a slippery rock and boom. I mean, how do you plan for that? You can't. You can't. So I think that was perfect illustration for the things that you cannot plan for. Second point, keep it out of sight. And this is something that has been more top of mind for me recently than in the past. And I think part of that comes from, you know, SUVs, because that model of vehicle in particular allows a lot of visibility into the cabin itself. Some of the SUV trunks have a cover that comes out so that you can't see into the trunk area, but a lot of them, they're just exposed. So if you're renting an SUV, right, for your trip, and I think that was the case with John because he flew out to California, your stuff is exposed in there, then I think you have to find a way to keep it out of sight. Our rule of thumb in our family these days is that when we leave the car in a public place, in a parking lot, whatever, we don't want anything to show. We don't want anything to show. So we pick up all items and put them out of sight, because I want zero motivation to break into the car. Zero motivation. So certainly I don't want iPhone cables showing, things like that. I don't want any bags showing, no backpacks, nothing. I like, if someone looked in there, I want them to see nothing and really reduce their motivation to break into the vehicle. So keeping it out of sight is one of the strategies that I use. The third technique is also to keep it with you. So nimble photographers definitely have an advantage in this area, because if I go into a restaurant most of the time, and when I'm in nimble mode, which is most of the time, if I go into a restaurant or convenience store, even for a short while, I'm bringing my stuff with me. If I go into Starbucks, I'm bringing my bag. If I go into a restaurant, I'm definitely bringing my bag. And even if I'm going into a 7-Eleven, I'm bringing my bag, unless there's a specific reason why I cannot bring my bag. And of course, when you're doing a travel from A to B, like John was, it's not as practical because he's got big bags, right? So that's a case where you're vulnerable and you really have to keep it out of sight and keep it insured. If it's smaller, if you're not doing that big A to B journey from West Coast to East Coast, and you can take it with you, do take it with you. Do take it with you into restaurants, into stores, all that kind of stuff. And I just feel much better when I have my gear with me. Fourth point is prepare for risky situations. Now, originally when I wrote this, I wrote avoid risky situations. And then when I thought about it, I go, you can't really avoid risky situations if you're a photographer, especially if you're an urban photographer. Sometimes what you want is also has a little bit of risk associated with it. And I'll give you a perfect example. When we were photographing at dusk in the French Quarter for a workshop, not this season, but previous season, I hired an off-duty officer to accompany us. So there were eight of us walking around. We were traveling light. We tried to have nondiscreet bags, but we did have our cameras out when we were taking pictures. And so someone that was keeping an eye on us would have figured out that we were probably a photography group. And the advice that I got actually from my advisor, Tilly, who was my advisor in Louisiana at the time, she was helping me with this workshop. She did a great job. And one of the best pieces of advice that she gave me was, hey, we should hire an off-duty officer to help us for this one shoot, because it's at a vulnerable time in a place that, you know, sometimes can be risky. So I did. I took Tilly's advice. I loved it because it allowed me to focus on the photography and not always be looking over my shoulder, which really isn't good for the creative process. So that was something that I learned from, you know, one of my folks that was helping me put together a workshop, and something that I have remembered ever since. Prepare for risky situations, you know, regardless, that's just one example, regardless of what they are, try to have some sort of plan to help mitigate the risk and put the odds back in your favor. And then finally, when you return home, lock it up. And I have started doing this. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't leave the occasional camera out on the desk or something. I do that. Of course I do. I'm not the minute I walk in the door locking everything up. I do have camera gear out and about, right, when I'm using it during the course of the day and all that. However, the bulk of my collection that I'm not using does go into a locking cabinet and a safe. I have both. In fact, I have a safe inside a locking cabinet. Now, this doesn't mean that someone that would break in would not ultimately be able to get to this. I'm not Fort Knox or anything. However, the way that I look at it is that by locking it up, it does take more time to get to the stuff. And I think time is actually something, is one of the defenses that we have. Because the longer that it takes someone to get to something, the odds are that they'll run out of time and have to leave before they actually get to it. So I figure that any amount of time that I can use to stretch out anything that might happen at anywhere that I live or work is something that puts the odds a little bit more in my favor. So locking it up isn't the false security that it's always going to be safe. Locking it up is just saying, hey, I'm, switching the odds to a little bit more in my favor that this stuff will survive a break-in. Okay, so those are the five things that I think are good for protecting the gear itself. Insuring it, keeping it out of sight when you're traveling, keeping it with you when you can, like when you go into a restaurant, preparing for risky situations, and then locking it up when you're not using it at home. And I would say that locking it up also applies to when you're at a motel or somewhere that has a safe. You can put your most valuable lenses and camera and laptop in the safe when you go out to eat or when you're not going to be in the room for a while. Okay, now let's talk about the content itself. That's important as well. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, that was a part in John's case that I feel really bad about. I was able to send him the pictures from his presentation, those 8 shots, but I fear that that's all he's going to have from the workshop. When we can, when we're on the road, I think backing up to the cloud, whether you have a Dropbox account, whether if you're in the Apple ecosystem and you have iCloud, if you're in the Adobe ecosystem and you have Creative Cloud, whatever is available to you, maybe not backing up everything, but at least backing up, when you do your sort, the 3-star shots or your favorites or, however you mark those, does provide some protection against loss of gear. And loss of gear can happen all sorts of different ways. I remember, I've told this story here before about when we were in Iceland and one of my fellow photographers left her memory cards, her valuable memory cards, in the rental car when she turned it in. That's one way that can happen. Or you can, leave your cards, any number of places. A card can go bad on you. Computer can go bad on you. There's just so many ways with technology for you, to get screwed. It's unbelievable, really, when you start thinking about it. So when you do have access to the internet or to Wi-Fi, I think it's good on the road to have some sort of system, if not to back up everything that you're shooting, at least to back up the stuff that you like, the assets that are important to you. People tease me at the workshop sometimes, not as much as they used to, but still happens. They tease me about using photos in addition to Capture One Pro and a little bit of Lightroom Mobile. And I've always been a proponent of photos, not because I'm in love with the application itself, I do like it, but because of the way that it's connected to my iPhone and that when I put a memory card into my computer and, I load images into Photos and all that, that all of that stuff automatically, goes into the cloud and propagates to my other devices. And that part of it I really like. And then, of course, I use Luminar as my editing extension with photos. So most of my Luminar work actually happens through photos. The image goes into photos where it's cataloged and backed up. And then I use Luminar editing extension on it. I make it look pretty. And then, when I save that, then that version of it, that version that was enhanced by Luminar, also gets backed up into the cloud and also is propagated to my other devices. And it's just something that works very nicely for me. I don't have to think about it. And if I were to have an incident where I lost my physical gear, then I know that I would have at least a percentage of my images backed up, and I wouldn't lose all of that content as well, and the work as well, too. I mean, at our workshop, we had, labs every day. These folks were spending 2-3, sometimes up to 4 hours during the course of the day. The day was a little bit longer, We would do a lot of shooting, but we were also doing pretty much 16 and 17 hour days. So they would have, 2-4 hours of lab. So you hate to lose all that work as well as, the images themselves. So that's the other side of it that I think is important, to make sure to the best of your ability that you have some sort of cloud backup when you have Wi-Fi access to help you if something terrible happens to your equipment. So just to put a finishing thought on this, first of all, I really appreciate, John just like stepping forward and saying, look, let's feature this on the podcast. Let's talk about this. And instead of just curling up in a ball and saying, I lost everything, which I think some of us would do, in all honesty, myself included. Hats off to John on this, because I just really appreciate him urging me to talk about this as soon as possible. And then second of all, I hope that what John has gone through and what I've talked about on this show, it moves you forward so that you put some of these protections at the top of your list. Our goal is to make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone in our virtual camera club. If it does happen, that there's enough protections in place to, mitigate the impact, the bad impact of the event. So I'm crossing my fingers that, you'll review your plan, shore up the areas that need shoring up, so that when you come home from your next adventure, you have both your gear and your images. Major Case Act copyright legislation passed by Senate Judiciary Committee. And case is in all uppercase, C-A-S-E. It's the Case Act. And you can read the article. I have the link to the original article in the show notes. So you just click on that link and it will take you over to the site where you can read it. This is a Petapixel article. But I want to read you some of this because, we've talked about copyright off and on over the last year, and I think this is an interesting piece of news. The Case Act, a major piece of legislation that would introduce a small claims court for copyright infringement cases, has officially been passed by the Senate Judiciary Committee, clearing the way for a full vote on the Senate floor. This is a major step forward for copyright legislation, which was introduced by a bipartisan group of senators from Louisiana, North Carolina, Illinois, and Hawaii. As of now, defending your copyrights means taking your case to federal court, a complicated and expensive proposition. If passed, the Case Act would remedy this by establishing a small claims tribunal within the U.S. Copyright Office, making it much easier and cheaper to defend your copyrights in court. The unappealable court would be staffed by 3 full-time copyright claims officers appointed by the Librarian of Congress, who would be allowed to assign damages up to $15,000 per infringed work and up to $30,000 total. Passing out of committee is a big step for the Case Act, but the fight to establish a small claims court in the U.S. Copyright Office is far from over. The bill will now go to the Senate floor for a full vote, while the House version continues to move through the House of Representatives. Now, this article didn't say anything about this, but my assumption being since this would be managed by, you know, the U.S. Copyright Office, is that, especially based on the recent Supreme Court ruling, that you need to have established copyright, according to the guidelines of the Copyright Office, on images that you want to take to the Small Claims Tribunal, if indeed it happens. So you just can't say, hey, you know, that's my picture, I have the raw file, and then, you know, get your $15,000 for an infringement. So I'll keep an eye on this. I'll report if anything new happens. But this is promising at this very early stage of progress. Just a few notes for our Virtual Camera Club members. First of all, for our Inner Circle members, guess what? This week, I will announce the winner of the Smartphone Photo Challenge. So stay tuned for that. We had a lot of entries, and they were terrific. In fact, we were talking about them at the workshop, how good the smartphone entries were for this challenge for our Inner Circle members. If you don't know what the Inner Circle is, those are Patreon members who support our podcast. We had four of them. We had four Patreon members attend this recent workshop. It was fantastic. I had a little something extra for them to acknowledge them as our VIPs. And it was a nice moment for me to be able to look them in the eye and thank them for their support. If this podcast is valuable to you, if the new projects are valuable to you, if having things like physical workshops at a reasonable cost are valuable to you, then I would urge you to consider becoming an Inner Circle member. All you have to do is just click on the tile, the Patreon tile, that's on every page of the Digital Story. Take a look at our Inner Circle site, see what you think, and then hopefully you will be impressed enough to become a member and join us in supporting this photography community. Also want to mention that we have B&H and Amazon tiles on all the pages of the Digital Story. We talk a lot about equipment here. We talk a lot about gear. If you hear something here and you go, you know what, I think I'm going to get it, if you would go back to the site and just click on the respective tile, either B&H or Amazon, that you're going to shop at. If you click on that tile first, that'll take you over to their site. Then you can just shop and do what you would normally do. That helps support this site, and it doesn't cost you a penny more. Just by going over to Digital Story, click on the B&H tile or the Amazon tile, go over to their site, do your shopping. That helps us. That helps us a lot. And I hope you keep that in mind next time you go out and buy something lovely for yourself. And then finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. They are our longest running sponsor. We had a guest speaker at our workshop. His name is John Hershey, and he's a local Bodega Bay photographer. And he has fine art greeting cards all over Bodega Bay, in shops, at the visitor center, you know, in a coffee shop. It's hard to find an area where he doesn't have his greeting cards. He's worked hard on this business. He's formed a lot of great relationships. And one of the relationships that he has is with Red River Paper, who provides all the materials that he needs for this fine art revenue stream. John shared his cards with us in the complete packages with glassine sleeves and envelopes and everything. And they looked fantastic. And right away you're going, I could make something like this. And you can. You can get all your supplies at Red River Paper. All you have to do is add your own artwork, do a little inkjet printing, and you have something beautiful that you can use as a gift or a little freelance work, okay? So Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Click on it, nose around, look at the fine art greeting card area, see what you think. And they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you shore up any weak links in your protection of your gear and your content. Come back and join me next week. Have a fabulous week. Looking forward to spending more time with you. Until then, bye-bye now.